We are ready. All right.
Okay, thank you. Let's call the meeting in order. Mr. Tate, could you do a roll call, please?
Sure will. Good evening, everyone. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Susan Armstrong.
Present.
Ms. Holly Ingram.
Present.
Ms. Alice Boone.
Here.
Ms. Mimi Taylor Hendricks.
Present.
Mr. Don Fitz.
I'm here, and I apologize that my computer camera does not want to work tonight.
No problem at all. Mr. Andrew Wolf.
Present.
All right, Mr. Esley Hamilton.
Here.
All right, Mayor Crow.
Here.
All right. City Manager Gregory Rose has an excused absence for tonight. City Attorney John Mulligan.
Present.
Sinan Alpasan.
Here.
And myself, Errol Tate. All here.
Excellent. We have a full house. Let's have an approval agenda that was submitted to us by Mr. Tate. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Any second?
Second.
Thank you. Agenda is approved. All right. Citizen participation. Mr. Tate, do you feel comfortable reading all the comments, or you would like to sign them to be read? It's up to you.
We could split them up if that's possible. I'll go if we want to go through the email that I sent out today.
I will follow anyone's lead on this, but usually at city council meetings, we assume that our members have gotten the emails and either have read them or will read them. But if you want to, you sure can. We just tend to say, we want you to read the emails, but for everybody to reread them again, if you've already done so. Susan, it's your call to make, but you would be fine if everyone.
I think any of them were extensive, were they? They were relatively short.
I'm inclined to reading them just so that we can hear them, all of us collectively.
Yeah.
We got, I'm prepared to read the one from the candidate for third ward alderman, alderperson.
Oh yeah, that's Mr. and Mrs. Bentham.
Yes.
All right, I'll read that one first.
And okay.
I'll move to the one that we got from Ms. Harden. And then there is one that's from Ms. Masimba. That's another one that's from a St. Louis City resident, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So let me go to the one that's from Mr. and Mrs. Benton. It says, Dear Mr. Tate, my name is, I won't bash or harsh up the spelling or pronunciation of that name, but Mr. and Mrs. Benton, and I am a candidate for alderperson in Ward 3 of the City of St. Louis. I would like to join the many supporters of changing the street names. University City, I learned about the renaming effort from a webinar sponsored by the Gateway Green Alliance, Universal African People's Organization, and Teens Taking Action in St. Louis. The current names of Jackson, Amherst, Wilson, and Pershing only serve to reinforce the long history of oppression of African and other colonized people. I would suggest Malcolm X, Fannie Lou Hamer, or Hamer, and Ella Baker, and Justice as possible replacements for the current names. I hope my intervention in this matter can help to forward your process in some small way. I believe that 37% of the UCity population that is Black would really appreciate a progressive approach to this issue that goes beyond the traditional street renaming strategy. Sincerely, Mr. and Mrs. Benton, candidate for Ward 3, alderperson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tate.
There's another one from Ms. Harden. Says, Dear Mr. Tate, as a UCity resident, I first heard about street renaming while joining the online city council meeting in November. I learned more about it in the December 2nd Zoom webinar hosted by the Gateway Green Alliance, Universal African People's Organization, and Teens Taking Action in St. Louis. I fully support this effort to change street names from those historical racists to those who have fought for justice. Here are my suggestions. Mike Brown or Michael Brown, Bud, Dred Scott, or Chuck Berry. Thanks for your consideration. There is another one from Ms. Simba, and it says, Greetings, Errol Tate. I heard about the street renaming during the December 2nd, 2020 Zoom webinar hosted by the Gateway Green Alliance, Universal African People's Organization, and Teens Taking Action in St. Louis. I am in total unity with the four streets the task force is currently considering for renaming. These include Jackson Street, Pershing Street, Wilson Street, and Amherst Street. I am an African-American man who grew up in St. Louis City, and I find it totally repugnant that any freedom-loving human would be made to live and walk on streets named after history's most abhorrent monsters. Participated in the ongoing slaughter and dissemination of whole groups of people, my people. This level of human destruction of life is referred to as genocide when spoken of honestly, usually in societies where the perpetrators of said genocide no longer hold a monopoly on the writing of human history. But in societies where descendants of the aggressors still rule and where the system still functions to achieve the same outcomes, in parentheses, extraction of wealth, etc. Those descendants find it intolerable to make any admission of the continued legacy of their forebears. They instead prefer that not a single crevice of light reach the brains of the conqueror who might find it necessary to criticize society. This is the origin of the reluctance to make even symbolic gestures of change, such as renaming a simple street. The righteous stance by those who are calling on these streets to be renamed is self-evident, and no person walking on the forward side of history would accept any excuse, no matter how benign, to hold this up. These street names should be changed immediately, and it should become accompanied with acknowledgement of the foul consequences of genocide and colonial domination, so embedded in the U.S. history, along with the acknowledgement of the Black community right to rename them. Such an act is likely to inspire other municipalities to begin their speedy removal of all the vestiges and genocide of colonial oppression. Ms. Tashara Masamba, 4535 Fair Avenue, Unit B. Don had one that he sent in as well. Don, would you like to read that from Mr. and Mrs. Belief that you sent over?
I'm at my wife's computer, so I don't have that in front of me. Could you read it? I urged him to send it to you. I sent an email back saying, please send it to Errol Tate.
Yeah, okay. All right. So this one came in through Don, but it says, hello, Mr. Tate. While I do not live in University City, I support efforts to rename streets honoring men and women who dishonored us all as a nation. It is my desire that this correction find its way to other cities as well. On a personal note, although Michael Brown was wrongly murdered, in my opinion, I would not want my street named after him because of his checkered past. This may be a non-starter for many others as well. Blessings, Ollie. But he did also have more information. As of December 1st, 2020, there are four streets of interest in the city of University City and park naming. Don, let me.
You already read everything that Ollie said. That was just something that I sent to Ollie because he asked me, you know, for background information.
All right. I just wanted to make sure of that. And let me just double check, guys. That was four comments that was sent over.
Hello. Oh, they're so cute.
Keeping me company.
Okay, I think the other ones would be from about the Osage community. I think those were the other two that needed to be read. Am I correct, Ms. Armstrong? About the Osage community?
Yeah, Don did send in some information about that, and it was collaborated with someone else too. Several pages of a book that showed some information about the price of the land and things of that nature. Yeah, he sent that in.
So, Mr. and Mrs. Duncan, you have the floor, if that's all right, with the task force for your...
Hello?
You're on mute.
You're on mute. And you know, Carol and Don, and Carol and Jim, there's something, you know, we're receiving names from the community, and we'd also like for you all to submit some names that you think would be representative of the humanity of the people who occupy this land. So, but you know, you have the floor, Carol and Jim.
Yes, we sent Don asked for some information. I scanned it out of a book, the best primary reference, and sent that to Don. And then I did send a summary of the Osage in Missouri, what happened to them, that Jim and I put together, and I sent that out to, I sent that to Susan, and she said she sent it to everybody. So you all have a pretty good picture of how they were mistreated, although it goes way, way, way beyond that. If you know about, have any of you read the book Killers of the Flower Moon?
No.
Anybody? It was on the bestseller list last year before, by David Gran, a writer for the New York Magazine. And it's about the Osage murders, the Osage, what I sent you was very, very historic, going way back over 100 years. But in the 1920s, when they discovered oil on their reservation,
entrepreneurs,
caretakers. No, there's a word that they use, not that. Anyway. A man came in and talked them into letting them control their holdings, and then they would disappear. The Osage Indian would disappear. They would marry women, Osage women, and then they would disappear, be killed. That's what the book is about. One particular family that had about 8 or 9 family members murdered, but over the early, late 1800s, early 20s, way over 200 Osage were murdered for their oil holdings. So, I mean, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to say something?
One of the problems with the Osage Nation at that time was the federal government was taking the children away from their families and putting them in schools, like in Pennsylvania around. And they had a law passed that if an Osage could not read and speak English, then they had to have a guardian. And they appointed banks and law firms and railroads even. There was a lot of underhanded working, but they were appointed as guardians of these people who had immense oil wealth because of their reservation setting on top of a big oil field. So what happened was they conveniently had them done away with, and believe it or not, Oklahoma did not do a great deal to stop the murders, and the infant FBI finally stepped in, and the Osage had to pay some of the cost of investigating these murders. But at one time, they were the wealthiest people per capita in the world because of their oil field.
What years was this, Jim? What years were this?
What year?
Around what time?
1920s is when the hike. Wow. It's called the Time of Sorrows. And in that book, David describes it as being a free-for-all whereby unsavory elements interjected themselves into the fabric of the Osage community and took advantage of them. And as Carol told you, over 200 of them were murdered.
Mm-hmm. There's another great book called about it, called The Deaths of Sybil Bolton. That was written by a writer from the Washington Post who happens to Dennis McAuliffe, who happens to be Osage, descendant Osage, and he researched into his great-great-grandmother's death and found out too that she was 21 years old, had a baby, and her husband murdered her for her oil holdings. Anyway, it goes on and on with the Osage. So that's, we're hoping that if perchance any streets are renamed, that at least one, maybe two would be, would use Osage, the word Osage and our Osage.
Right.
I agree. Do we have by any chance any record of the last Osage chief that would have been around at the time that University City became incorporated as a city, early 1900s?
Do you know the Osage chief when University City was incorporated?
What year was University City incorporated?
1906. What is it, 1906?
1906.
Washington, the star that travels.
That would be hard for a lot of people to pronounce.
Send it anyway.
Yes.
We can send that. We can also say James Bighart is one of the most famous of the Osage chiefs. And right now we have Chief Standing Bear is the current chief. He's a fantastic, fantastic guy.
And to bring it even more locally, is there any particular, and Carol, you had talked about where the, you know, the arrowheads are found. Are there any particular areas that would be in University City that could, you know, have a plaque or, because Elsie had talked about Clayton doing plaques and things like that to recognize historic Native American communities. Any particular area in the University City that you had talked about arrowheads being found in certain areas? And
up on Blackberry Lane, up on that hill above that strip mall where the Asian stores are, there's a Asian restaurant and Asian grocery store on the south side of Olive Street Road behind there. Esten knows where there's up there on Blackberry Lane. That wherever the hill goes up, there's usually, that's where Mr. Howard Murphy said he was finding stone points or arrowheads.
Didn't that used to be a Steak and Shake, that strip?
Up there, mm-hmm.
Years ago.
Mm-hmm. But I also had read it sometime, and I don't remember exactly where, I could probably find it, that Olive, what we now call Olive, was originally what they called a plank road, because they basically had set planks of wood, I guess, to keep the wheels of the wagon from sinking into the mud and things of that nature. But that was all developed in the line of the Indian hunting paths. And that's why they took that road, because part of some sense of a road had already been established, because they were hunting paths.
A lot of our...
Not true.
Yes.
No.
First of all, that's not true. The original road was Old Bottom Road. The Indians and the early pioneers always took the top of the ridge. And so wherever you see a road that has ground descending on both sides, mm-hmm. that's probably an old road. The part of Olive Street Road that goes through University City wasn't created until 1851. And that was because the state legislature authorized toll roads to be built around the state and to charge tolls to use their planks. And they took that route because it was marshier and they had to have those planks on there or it would have been just mud.
Right. And
you can find the same situation in many other parts of St. Louis County.
Okay.
Esley is the final word. I know Esley a long time.
I agree.
The final word. But I want to tell Mimi that she's correct that all over North America, a lot of the major highways and byways were originally Indian trails, started out as Indian trails. True.
Yeah.
Carl Chapman, the father of Missouri archaeology, in one of his books has some maps to that effect.
It's the same thing as Esley said. It's Highway 63, I think, is the best example. It follows ridges. Okay. And it's just what Esley said. You don't want to get down in a river bottom in a floodplain where there's wetlands with a heavily laden wagon. So they did. They stayed to those ridges. And the Indians would do that simply to watch for game. They were busy hunting. They were hunter-gatherers, and they would be on the high ridges watching for game.
But go ahead.
Excellent.
And I'd like to explain a little bit about the reason for my call, for my emails with Carol. This is Don. During the last call, Susan suggested something about an apology by University City. And I thought that would be particularly important for our subdivision, University Heights, because the original indenture that set it up somewhere like 1906, 1908, had an exclusionary clause in it that only people of the Caucasian race could be in our, could buy property unless there were servants. So I was reporting on our work to the task force work to the board meeting of University Heights and mentioned that we should do an apology. And so people asked me to draft an apology. And so I can find everything I need about slavery. You know, that's just go to web and find things. But the things that Carol had said on our last call, I could not find. And I don't put things in unless I can document them. And so I said, can you give me a source for the when the Osage were driven out of Missouri and when the $5,000. And so that's what she sent me. And I don't know that everybody got that email because I think it only went to four or five people. But if anyone wanted to document those figures, I found the book that she took it from, and I sent out the full bibliographic reference to document that.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Tate.
Go ahead,
Errol. I think I sent it out to everyone, so they should have in that second email that I sent out. I also have one more comment. I don't know if you all seen it. I would like to go ahead and read that one.
Please.
So,
the question was a little while ago, is there any specific area in University City? And I would say no, there's no specific area except along River DePere and up on the hill. But I don't think we should concern ourselves with that. Any, because the streets that I've heard named, Jackson, Amherst, Pershing, and Wilson, I don't know that Jackson, Amherst, I know are not along River DePere. I don't know about Wilson.
Wilson is, the reason why it was cleared was because it flooded and two people died in the flood. Because I guess it's the east side of the street is directly adjacent to the creek, one branch of the River DePere.
All right, I'm ready, guys, and I can go ahead and read this last comment to you all.
Please.
Okay. Before, Mr. Tate, not to interrupt, this is Andrew Wool here. Before you go on to the next comment, I just wanted to ask one question about the Osage. Also, Dr. Dios Granados, you might not remember, but I graduated with Carlos and I was good friends with Sergio and Rafael. So nice to hear your voice again. My question is there any modern day, you know, present representative of the Osage that when it comes time to choose meanings of new street names and such and the dedication that we can contact and have come? Or, you know, or are they still around this area or have they, you know, migrated their modern day tribe to somewhere else is my question. Can we bring someone in today?
Yes. In short, yes. They live in northeastern Oklahoma on the Osage Reservation. There are Osage here in Missouri. There are Osage all over the world, but there are Osage here in Missouri. We have a group that keeps in touch with each other. But the Osage live about 400 miles southwest in northeastern Oklahoma. And I don't think it would be any problem at all to get a representative to come. They've come here.
Okay, I was just going to say, if we're going to, you know, go the route of naming some things after some Osage people, then we might want to get their input on whom they might nominate to name for those streets.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea, and I'm sure they'd be happy to hear from you. If you want to write to Chief Standing Bear or his assistant chief, Redcarn, or his assistant, John Williams, we can put you in touch with all of them. That's a good idea to ask them.
Great. Thank you.
Can I ask a question? And maybe, Esley, you know more information, but I found an article. I was doing a quick look of a couple of streets, and Bonham I took a quick look at, and there was a NPR article that referenced what predated Old Bonham, and it tells a story about some of the streets being named after Native Americans. So LaRue, Missouri, named for the Missouri Indians, and LaRue, Kickapoo, named after the Kickapoo. And I'm wondering if there would be any rationale to look at Old Bonham as a potential street to rename with an Osage name, just because maybe there was a long time connection to a prior naming to Native Americans. The article also specifically states, similar to what was raised earlier, that for some reason the Osage were left out. So it is interesting to note that although the principal trading partners of the town, and the town is referencing St. Louis, not necessarily the city, but the region, were the Grand or Great Osage Indians, there was no street name for these significant Indians.
Oh, yeah. What they're referring to there is the street naming in the original St. Louis Common, which is south of downtown. And, you know, the north-south streets are named for states, and the east-west streets are named for Indian tribes like Cherokee, Chippewa, Potomac. Some of them are river names, but they were named for the Indian tribes. Okay. And there's a whole bunch of them down there. But it is ironic that most of the tribes that were in this area are not included in those street names. But Old Bonham is actually one of the oldest streets in the whole region, because it went out to the Bonham settlement, which was also called St. Philip, which was about where the US 40 bridge crosses the Missouri River in Chesterfield, and it's all totally washed away. But that was one of the early roads, and that's one of the reasons why people settled in Chesterfield at such an early date, because there was a road already going out there. For example, our Faust Park in Chesterfield has the home of Missouri's second governor, Frederick Bates, and he settled there partly because it was on an existing road.
Gotcha. Thank you for the clarification. So again, I'm just wondering if there is some rationale to taking one of the oldest roads in University City to connect it with some of the oldest inhabitants, or some of the oldest that shaped the region. I also would just throw out for
trouble figuring out what the relationship of the north-south part of Old Bonham is to the east-west part of it.
Yes.
Yeah, that would clarify that for people.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I guess the other part of it too is, are we looking for streets where there are maybe fewer homes and more prominence? You know, Old Bonham is certainly a street that I know and pass on a regular basis, whereas Blackberry and others seem to be much more streets that you would go to if you're just part of that neighborhood. So just throwing it out for thought for later.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Tate, would you like to read the comment, the citizen comment?
Yes. This comment comes from a Mr. Jeff Coleman from Florissant, Missouri. And it says, as a 25-year citizen of St. Louis County, I'm reluctant to admit I live unfortunately close to one of its most nominally bigoted thoroughfares, named for pioneering white supremacist avatar Charles Lindbergh. However, I recently discovered my situation is far from unique. In a recent meeting at the Gateway Green Alliance, I learned University City is littered with tributes to racism, brutality, and genocide. Streets such as Amherst, Jackson, Pershing, and Wilson celebrate a history so grisly as to make the Loop Trolley look like a Mary Engelbert quilt by comparison. I claim no University City residency, so perhaps my values of human rights and decency are inconsistent with the values cherished here in the city. In the event that UCity rebuffs the burgeoning countrywide effort to dismantle our public symbols of oppression, I will pledge my full support for redesign of every municipal line artwork to include partially deviled POCs between their teeth and claws in furtherance of accuracy and transparency. Jeff Coleman, Florissant, Missouri.
Thank you, Mr. Tate. You know, I've spent some time thinking about and talking with my neighbors, as well as the committee people, the task force people, and the word that comes to me, Elsley, I hope you lean into this word, is restore. To restore our area, to restore, restory. So we've got a lot of history, but there's other stories that are underlining their narrative that we've all memorized in school. And those stories need to be acknowledged. That's my biggest takeaway, to restore the spirit, the emotion, the mental health, to align with our timely purpose. I mean, Pershing was a man of his time. Amherst was a man of his time, but times have changed. And it's evident in our resolution. I think we're, you know, the fact that we're taking on more information and gathering more citizen comment, I think there's a lot of power in the discussion. And again, Mimi and Alice, we were all on Don's call on December 2nd. And then just the conversation alone is growing. So I want to jump to some of the names that we got from the December 2nd call. And I'm going to pull up my screen. You guys got it in the action log. Can I share my screen, please?
Yes. There you go.
Okay. I did that. I did my part.
Here it is. Susan, before we begin.
Go ahead.
As we gather today, we acknowledge that this land is a traditional territory of the Osage Nation, the Illini Confederacy, which includes Cahokia, Peoria, the Illini peoples. We therefore pay our respects to elders, both past and present. May we nurture our relationship with our native neighbors and the shared responsibilities to their homelands where we all reside today. Specifically, we commit to learning more about the people, history, and contemporary concerns of these indigenous communities.
Excellent, Mimi. Thank you so much. Thank you. So if on your action log, you'll see renames. There's a worksheet called renames. And until December 2nd, I was tracking what was being said from the citizen comment, Ronald McNair, George Washington Carver, my recommendation, Wilson Pickett, Wilson Rawls, August Wilson, Mary Wilson, Jackson Pollock, Charles, Lauren Jackson, David Edwards Jackson, and then the call. So there's a couple trends, and Don, you might want to step up because they were talking, I was typing, trying to capture all of them. Catherine Johnson, Angela Davis, James Baldwin, Nate Turner, William Monroe Trotter, leaders of slave rebellion, and then Don, you submitted a doc on that too. Michael Brown, Kim Gardner, Ralph Bucci,
Bunch.
And then a resident and activist living, Zaki Bukut. Can you say his name, you guys?
Zaki Buruti.
Zaki Buruti, George Floyd, Jamala Rogers, John Wright, Percy Greenstreet, Miles Davis, Clark Terry. The last group was, we should be naming them about musicians rather than generals. Kind of nice. Miles Davis, Clark Terry, Lester Bowen, and then names for historically Black colleges. So someone did say, is there any, you know, Black people that it's named for? And we do have Morehouse. That's a street in University City. But as you guys can tell, that this dialogue is bursting at the seams to be a part of the story of University City.
Well, isn't the elementary school named after Barbara Jordan?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
And that was changed from Daniel Boone.
Yes.
Right. I like the idea of Ronald McNair because I've been feeling bad about the school system selling that building, mm-hmm. and we're going to be losing that name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right.
Felt bad about that too.
Right.
Hey, this is Andrew Wool here. I just want to interject something. I'm not sure, you know, when we were convened as a task force to identify streets, I didn't realize we might be renaming them, which is fine. But I want to emphasize the localness of it. I, in the first Zoom meeting, talked about renaming to the historically Black colleges and universities. That's a no-brainer because we're University City. You know, you're talking about people, I'm sorry, but, you know, renaming streets to Wilson Pickett instead of Woodrow Wilson. I've talked to a lot of people I know in U-City. They think that stuff like that is silly. What I think the renaming part should be very local. Should be obviously, you know, if you want to get some Osage input, if you want to get some African-American input, that would be first. Women, like I mentioned last Zoom meeting, E.G. Lewis, the founder, you know, once calling University City the Women's Republic of the United States. So when we decide, if we decide, wherever route we go, I really want the emphasis to be on local so that they have a direct tie to University City. Love Wilson Pickett's music, love Mary Wilson's music. No idea why they'd be associated with St. Louis. Definitely not musicians in terms of Miles Davis, Chuck Berry, all that stuff. Love them. Listen to their music all the time. Don't think they need a street named after them. When there are so many noble people, we got to talk to the Osage people, get some input. There are many women there from University City. Obviously, many African-American people that grew up here. You know, going back into the annals of our history, that we have enough to choose from in that, you know, small pool of people, we don't need to go outside. So I would like the emphasis from moving forward, and it's just my opinion, mm-hmm. is that we kind of eliminate these broad things, you know, that have no connection to University City, and sort of take a walk of fame approach where it's like, what's their connection to U-City? Do they satisfy the four things that, you know, our task force is, you know, offensive, but they got to be righteous. They have to have done something in history. They have to be noble, you know, that they're noteworthy, that we can say that's why this street was named. Now, while I'm talking, I also want to say one thing, and this could also be a kind of pandering to both sides and kind of a milquetoast kind of answer solution. But someone suggested how, and the example is, on the East Loop on Del Mar, where Pie Pizzeria is, it's still Del Mar, but there's another sign underneath it that says Barack Obama Boulevard. And there's examples of that around town where a street is ceremoniously renamed something and has its own street sign underneath. Now, it's not the official green with white letters. It's a different color and different font, but it's a street sign. So it's honorably named and, but within the government system and the people that live on those streets that we talked about who might not want to, you know, change their addresses for their insurance and their billing and, you know, everything that might be a hassle. But this is sort of a, you know, kind of maybe middle of the road kind of approach where the name stays the same to the government. But there's a sign underneath with a ceremony and a renaming that, acknowledges that it's called something else. Now, that's just like one of the suggestions some of the people said to me, and I thought it was novel enough to, offered up to you guys. But yeah, my original point is going back, I really think that like we should concentrate on local connections when we talked about renaming these streets, because you also don't want to get into controversial things like a Mike Brown, like a Malcolm X. You know, I protested with Black Lives Matter. You know, I love Malcolm X. But again, you know, we need to go the opposite of an Amherst and a Jackson and what have you, and, you know, take the spectrum to the other side where it's less controversial, more noble, and more local. And that's all I had to say about that. Continue.
Thanks, Andrew. You know, again, we're simply recommending to the city council, and our task is to study the names, and maybe we could come up with our criteria as we collect this pool of names, a criteria, just like we were handed a criteria for the city council to evaluate the renames. That's a, that's always a possibility at the end of our 120 days. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, we have an obligation to citizen comments, so we do have to hear the comments, period. Explanation point.
And there's nothing wrong. I want us to move forward. I want us to make a difference, but I want us to also be creative. Mm-hmm. Everybody is, not everybody, but people are looking at changing the name as the only way to address issues. And there can be multiple ways to do that. Rededicating was one. The suggestion that Andrew came up with another. So, you know, by keeping it open, I think we have the greatest opportunity to bring in the most creative ideas.
Perfect. Thanks, Mimi. And
yeah, I totally support that. I think that at the last call, I think Sue suggested posting an apology in University Heights. I'm suggesting that our neighborhood association post an apology for things that have been done, and that it applies to specifically to things in our neighborhood association, the city of University City, state of Missouri, and United States as a whole. We have a lot of streets that have been named after people outside of University City. I think it's okay to have some, but I would not want to see us hamstrung to only people who are from University City. I think it's very fine to go outside of people who are University City. And I think it's time really to have a dramatic change, because other municipalities will be looking at what University City does. If University City says, well, we really don't need to rename Wilson, you know, Wilson Street, you know, because we can call it Wilson Pickett. We don't need to rename Jackson Street because we'll just say it's dedicated after Michael Jackson. Other municipalities are going to basically look at us and say, you don't need to do anything real. You can just go through the motions and just pretend. On the other hand, if we come up with names, I think Malcolm X is an absolutely wonderful name. I would love to live in a street named Malcolm X. I've admired him for 50 years. And I see nothing wrong with doing that. And so I think to the extent that we do something dramatic, the more dramatic it is, the more likely it is to be emulated by other parts of St. Louis County.
Thank you, Don. Any other comments on renaming?
Well, I do like that idea of funneling it to local, because we do have to get back to educating the people on those four streets that are impacted so that they do know the impact of the research that we've done. They know what we're attempting to do. It looks like, and I might be incorrect on this, that we're kind of at a nuclear bubble. And whereas we do have input and others that know what we're doing, do the property owners on the streets that we've considered renaming, are they aware of the research, or have they been educated? Do they know the import of what we're thinking? So, and again, it's just four streets so far.
Well, there could be another one.
Oh, which one?
So we're moving into subcommittee reports on street names.
Oh, okay. I'll wait for that.
So we're going into new business. So, we got your comment, Ms. Boone, for the record. And then we also have a little green space that might need to be named also. That's Andrew had talked to me about Andrew, you want to talk about that quick, small green space?
Yeah, two things. One, I don't know if he's on the call tonight, but didn't like a couple of Zooms ago, we had the University City's lawyer on involved?
Mr. Mulligan's on.
Okay, great. When it comes to renaming streets and the people on the street having a say, obviously I think like they're, you know, should be informed in an opinion, but there has to be some legal, you know, precedent, and maybe he could research that, you know, whereas like you don't have a right to like what your street is named. It can be changed anytime. Or maybe there's a precedent that like you can't just change a street name. You have to go through these things. So there might be some legal, you know, precedent there that somebody could call into question if we go one route and we didn't research the actual legal part of, you know, the city being able to change name without someone's consent. That being said, this green space is, let's see how to describe it, North Delmar, I mean, very West Delmar on the north side. Oak Brook used to be divided by a, as a kid, I called it a creek. It's clearly a sewer runoff from River de Pere. We used to fish in it, but there are no fish. But about 10, 15 years ago, the city put huge, massive pipes underneath and buried them and then covered up, you know, the green space. So Oak Brook is it's one street, but it's divided by these grassy, you know, knolls, if you will. And so one part of Oak Brook goes, you know, this way and the other goes that way. So it's two one-way streets. And so noticed only because, you know, a lot of the trees got knocked down and because the root systems were destroyed when they had to dig it out. So on the new map that we all got, you know, when this task force started, I noticed that they count that as a green space, which it never really was considered that before. And it doesn't have a name or anything. And I've talked to some of the neighbors and, you know, some think it's neat if you name it something. Obviously, the traditional name it green space after a mayor, you know, is up for, you know, consideration. But it doesn't have a name. They're not sure they want a name. You know, obviously, drive by it. It's a neat little, you know, it's about a half a mile long. So from Delmar, Oak Brook goes from Delmar to Barrick, which turns into Barrick, which is kind of like McKnight and Old Bonham right there. So it's a very small street. It's about a half mile each way. So, you know, it can, if that wants to be used to solve some problems, you know, some answers, some solutions, that's great. It's not named anything now negative, so we don't have to change anything. But I didn't notice it comes up on the new map as a green space that's yet unnamed. So that might give us some sort of, I don't know, wiggle way to do something with it. But just letting you guys know.
Thanks, Andrew. I pointed to the map on the Zoom. So let's move on to new business and subcommittee reports. Ms. Hendricks?
Yes, thank you. And I don't know how this happens. It seems like I go into Google something the way I've always Googled it. Maybe I changed a preposition or something and I come up with a whole new set of information. And that's is what happened early December when for some unknown reason, I jumped on the computer and looked up Kingsland. Now I read that George Kingsland owned property, a great deal of property, was very much tied into part of the development of Pagedale as well, because his property was that big and ran up that far up to Page. But it started there, and it said that, and I'll just read my notes, several pieces of information found on George Kingsland, who could be the namesake for Kingsland Avenue. So again, this has to be verified. On the 1860 census of slaveholders in our area, a George Kingsland is listed as owning 12 slaves. Then I found a George Kingsland who emancipated slaves according to the court records. May need to add this to our list of streets that need renaming. And then I attached some information, brief history of the city of Pagedale and Page Avenue. that talks about the primary landowners in the area were an Andrew Robertson, who controlled almost all of the land between Page and St. Charles Rock Road, George Kingsland, and the Watson family. And it goes down and talks about right away for Page Avenue was clearly identified through George Kingsland's property, headed northwest to North Hanley Road, as shown on the 1878 Pittsman Atlas, which I could not get a clear reading of. There's a George Kingsland who was involved with the Kingsland and Ferguson Manufacturing Company, partnered with D.K. Ferguson, who is David K. Ferguson, who also developed the Ferguson School. That was in approximately in the area of where Olive and Pennsylvania are today. And we follow through with that. So that information. And the emancipation list was on January 11th, 1865. State of Missouri officially ended the practice of slavery and emancipated the remaining persons held in bondage within the boundaries of the state. And I found on May 8th, 1848, an Ursula alias Ussi and children Sarah Josephine, who was 10, Susan Payton, who was 5, and Henrietta Payton, who was 3, by a George Kingsland. Point of interest right under that information was also May 26, 1857, Dred Scott, Harriet Scott, Eliza Scott, and Lizzie Scott by Taylor Blow were also emancipated. So it looks like we may need to see if we can connect this George Kingsland with the Kingsland Avenue that we have here in University City.
It's Kingsland in the third ward?
And it looks like
it goes to St. Kingsland, because you can cross Kingsland on Olive, and it goes north and south.
Yeah, second ward also.
Same thing is true of Ferguson. So our Ferguson Road could be named for Kingsland's partner.
David K. Ferguson, yes, but that's all I can find about him, and the fact that he established that school, Ferguson School, on that area that is now Olive and Pennsylvania, and then he was also with Mechanics Bank. He was president of Mechanics Bank. That's all I can find for him, and well, I did not find him on the slave list
because
excuse me,
school was our first. When the U City School District was founded, that was their first building.
Yes, that was their first school. So that's, but I'm not seeing anything else about him to connect him to anything else, but I'm very am concerned about George Kingsland.
Oh, you mean in terms of slavery?
Yes. Is this the same Kingsland that owned that property that was bordering up to what we now call Pagedale, which would have been in that area of, if you follow Kingsland on up, that's right where it drops you into Page. It said it did, you know, there were no real streets. However, the areas to the north of Page were fairly disconnected due to the fact that many streets still did not exist except for Kingsland Avenue. So I don't know. We'd have to see if this is the same George Kingsland.
All right, good people, it's 6:26. We've been at this for almost an hour, and I think we're at a good place to break. Unless, Holly, you had a report, or anyone else has a report for this week?
Did anybody check McKnight on the slaveholder census of 1860? There's a John McKnight who owned 3 slaves, a William McKnight who had 6. And out of curiosity, there's a William Woodson who owned 10.
Yeah, I thought I talked about this earlier. McKnight's estate, the house is still standing.
Sure. Okay.
Off of McKnight Road on Moydalgan. He was definitely, he was from Kentucky. He was definitely a slave owner.
Okay. So does that throw that name into contention as well?
Well, we haven't really talked about is everybody who once owned slaves, we're going to change all those names?
That's another point of point of order. Yeah, do we or not?
We have our resolution. Hello, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
How does that relate to specifically to slave owners?
Well, I mean, let's hold it up to it. Let's see. Okay, do they practice inclusion and equity? Affirmed. Affirm support for diversity, mean, the slave owners, they owned people. Do they welcome all regardless of race, religion, creed, color, ancestry, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, age, disability, political affiliation, marital status, familial status, income or education level? Did they institutionalize, did they practice welcoming efforts that promote inclusion? Do they condemn white nationalism? So
I refer to new names.
No, these are the offenses that we're holding up the old names to, all street names.
Well, then we're going to have to change all the names in the eastern part of the city, because Clements and Shoto were slave owners. Yeah. They were all slave owners, but we inherited those names. And this goes back to my initial argument that many of these names are not intended to be honorific. They were only intended to mark the place.
Went through their property, kind of a thing.
People lived or owned land. It was a way to help other people who, before we had street signs, know what the streets were. We can't go around the county eliminating every name of everybody who owned slaves. This was a slave state.
Still is.
We were also a border state, a border city. So
it was the state that that permitted the owning of slaves. We're border in the sense that we didn't join the Confederacy, but they had a star in their flag for us.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Hamilton, I appreciate that.
Esley, what about Hanley? Have you already discussed Hanley, Esley?
No, we have. Well, yeah, Hanley is another one. Yeah.
So, Holly, you had a hand up, Holly.
Yeah, I was just going to reference part of an earlier conversation around the importance of awareness, and that this is more than just going and trying to change a street name. And in some cases, we may not be changing street names. But I would think it's really important to establish a list of the streets in University City that had names of people that owned slaves, if for no other reason than to acknowledge that, and in some way to, and maybe it's not the city of University City that needs to apologize, but collectively as a state, I think you're right, Esley, that you're going to find a lot of streets named after folks that at one point in their life owned slaves. The city of Jennings itself is named after plantation owner and slave owner. I mean, by right of that city, I mean, you do away with that. So, but I think creating that list, and I think part of this is an awareness. I think the greatest thing we can do is not necessarily changing the names, although I see the importance of that, but it's bringing awareness to this very issue. And a community like University City, I believe we have a lot of support, whereas some other municipalities may not have the support that we already have within our residents to move some of this forward, and we could really lead the way.
And you know, thank you, Holly, thank you. I agree with you on that.
Provide some information on how to look up whether the people were slave owners or not, and I can copy that and send it to this committee because there
thank
are
you,
other
Esley.
Groups have been asking me about that.
I will put that on the action log, Esley, as your responsibility. And can you get it to Mr. Tate? When do you think you could get it to Mr. Tate? How soon?
Tomorrow, probably.
Tomorrow, and then he'll get it out to us so we can continue our study. You guys are doing amazing work. I was talking to Mimi. It started out academic, but it's turning to turn a little personal. It's inspiring what we're finding out. I appreciate everyone.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, if we have to change half the names in University City, that doesn't bother me at all. I would prefer not to do them all at once. I mean, I would prefer to say something like, these are the streets whose name are going to change in 2022. These are the streets in 2023. These are the streets in 2024. But I mean, let's remember why we're doing this. George Floyd died with a cop sitting or putting his knee on his neck and consciously killing him. that was an event that sparked demonstrations all throughout the summer of 2020. This committee did not, the task force did not just appear out of nowhere. It appeared because there were demonstrations all over the country saying America has never gotten around to repaying, to recognizing the racism that is endemic to the foundation of the existence of the country. And we need to change. There are certain times when the national consciousness, the state consciousness, the consciousness of a huge group of people changes and they want to do something, and then it goes into remission, and then you don't see it again for 5 years, 10 years, 20 or 50 years. If we do not act now to do as much as we can, you know, our great grandchildren are going to say, why did they have this, the chance to do something in University City in 2020 and nothing was done?
Well, I don't think that we're going to do
the difference between erasing the information and interpreting it.
How would we be erasing it?
If we eliminate all these names and just pretend that this era of Missouri never occurred.
Like the Osage history? You know,
well, we're not doing that, are we?
But it's been done. So I'm just saying that, we're protecting a certain group population, Elsley, and there's been others that were erased. And now that we're rebalancing, we're correcting the imbalance, or we're discussing it, at least discussing it. Street names have been changed before.
Yeah, no, and again, I think that we need to be objective about this. Again, I think I'm hearing some personal opinions and a lot of passion. And that's good, but you do have to step back and be objective.
And objectively, Ms. Boone, what do you think stepping back objectively, what do you see?
Well, again, looks like we landed on four names. I think now Kingsland has been added, Green Space, Oak Brook has been added. So that objectively is our list that we're looking at this point.
But can I step in? Oak Brook's doesn't have to have its name changed. That is not a problem name. That's just a suggestion Andrew has for possibly doing something else. But that's not a
right. Well, then let's take it off the list. Why is it on the list?
Yeah, we should take it off. This is Andrew. Yeah, it's not named anything, and obviously Oak Brook isn't. It has oak trees, and they considered the river to pair runoff a brook. So it's not an offensive name. I just noticed that it was unnamed on the new map. So we could take it off the list. It's not controversial at all. So I was just offering it up as if we have to name something maybe say a Mayor Crow in the future and there's an open green space, it's up to be named, but it's not under controversy at all right now. So yeah, we can remove that from the list.
Yeah, so let's just kind of stick to it. What the objective, what the facts are.
You guys, thank you. It says 6:35. Let's let everyone have the evening off, the rest of the evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Saturn and Jupiter.
We'll reconvene after the new year.
Yeah, the next one was not the next Monday, but after that, right? January?
What, the 4th?
January 4th.
Okay, super.
Merry Christmas. Right.
Have a good evening.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good holiday. Bye-bye.
Thank you.